The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Kevin Kelly, who is the CEO of a company called LGS Innovations. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you?
Well, not necessarily a sir, but doing pretty good. I'm doing great. I thought we could talk about technology and innovation. I did some research on your background, and this innovation is just all through your DNA everywhere. And it dawned on me, well, that's the name of the company. It's LGS Innovation. We should talk about innovations when they get them in the studio. But before we talk about innovations in your company, Kevin, tell us a little about your background, please.
Sure. I'm an electrical engineer by training, went to Penn State University, and eventually got a systems engineering master's degree from George Washington. I grew up a CIA brat all over the world. It gave me a unique perspective on things, seeing different cultures, growing up in different languages. I was never the majority of in any place that I lived, so it gave me a unique view of the world, and I think that helps me in my day-to-day life in work, dealing with hard problems, none of which are homogeneous and none of which are cookie cutter type problems, and it helps me gave me a diverse background from which I leverage and pull upon both my technical and social background to help solve hard problems for our customers.
Yeah, engineering background. I think if you talk to any group of engineers, they would recognize Bell Labs as really being profoundly impactful in the whole area of technology here. And then you're associated with Bell Labs too, is that right?
That's right. So what LGS is, it used to be Lucent Government Solutions. We were the federal part of Bell Laboratories. And I actually joined Bell Labs in 1997. I've been with the firm pretty much ever since. It was a short stint where I went to General Dynamics, but I was lucky enough to be able to return. And it was always a dream of mine going through EE school to someday be able to join Bell Labs. They're very selective about who they hire, and I guess they were asleep that day, and somebody decided to hire me, and I've been there ever since.
We went to hire Kevin B. Kelly, but we didn't hire just Kevin Kelly got hired. Yeah, I think that they had a big facility up in New Jersey, right? I mean,
yeah.
I can remember reading about that, and because when they designed it, they were near some waterfalls, they had energy. I mean, the whole story behind it is just too good.
Yeah, they had two great facilities in New Jersey, one at Homedale, New Jersey, and one in Murray Hill. And actually, if you go to the one in Murray Hill, which is still there today, you can peer into the room where the transistor was invented.
Yeah.
They also have a wonderful museum you can walk through that shows their inventions, like the solar cell and the first laser, the first fax machine, first cell phone. They had a lot of firsts.
I have three kids and two are engineers, and around the Thanksgiving table, sometimes a conversation bounces around Tesla versus Edison versus Bell versus bang, bang, bang. This is, you know, when it comes to innovation, these are really great places to start. So not a bad place to start. Not a good background
plan.
To have,
yeah.
Is it? You know,
that's right.
Really good. So how has that company evolved? So what happened? The company split off?
Yeah, so it was part of Lucent. It was a loosely organized business unit within Lucent Technologies. In 2006, Alcatel and Lucent announced their intent to merge, and so we had to create a subsidiary. Most of us had clearances. We had a lot of government contracts, some sensitive work. So we created what they call a foci mitigated entity, and it had about 440 people in it, and that started in January 2007. Ran that company as a subsidiary, wholly owned by Alcatel-Lucent, until 2014 when we spun out and went to a private equity group led by Madison Dearborn in Chicago and Covant in McLean, Virginia. And the company's grown significantly since then. We're up to about 1,100 employees now, and no end in sight. We have a lot of hard problems to solve and a lot of great people to apply to that.
Grown a lot since the last time you were in the studio 4 years ago.
It's
exploded, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Yeah. And doing research, looks like you guys have about 1,000 employees, 750 scientists and engineers.
Right.
Hard to recruit those folks. I mean, you know, they want challenges every day, and the culture's got to be right. The challenge has got to be right. They can just go and they can get a job tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah, you're hitting on a key point that we talk about a lot in the leadership meetings, and that's how do we attract and hire key talent. It's not easy to get a job in LGS. It's a part of our pickiness that we borrowed from Bell Laboratories, and sometimes we'll go through as many as 20 candidates to bring one into a single position. And we find that what we attract people to the company by explaining the missions that we serve. And once they understand the importance, the significance that they're going to have in working for LGS, we're not designing the next place this in my cart button on a retail website. We're actually tackling very hard problems that make a difference in national security. So that's what attracts people eventually, and that's what keeps them there.
You know, I teach at Georgetown. I've got a class tonight. 19 graduate students. I walk in there, and they all try to take my head off. And I'm teaching a course on digital strategy.
Okay.
And the first thing we talk about is not bits and bytes or HTML. We talk about listening to the customer with developing a customer persona. And I tell them, get a bunch of customers in a room and tape record what they say and then do a transcript of that and shut up and listen and shut up and listen. And in doing research on your company, what you folks try to do is try to respond to the intelligence community and what they're. So it's a very similar type of marketing approach.
Yes,
is just shut up, sit in the corner, and just listen and then try to figure out how you can help them. And that's a good formula for success.
It is. You know, that we actually chose the tagline for the company, Listen, Innovate, Deliver. So that goes out on all of our cut sheets, all of our marketing material. We've given somebody in the company, each person in the company, something that says listen, innovate, deliver on it. We want to make sure that they understand that's job number one, is to listen to the problem. It's also something that we're trying to educate the government acquisition community on. One of the best ways you can use a company like ours is to put us face to face with the mission operators and explain to us, what can't you do? What's keeping you up at night? What are your current capabilities, and what is it that you're trying to do that you're not able to do? I don't want to read it in an RFP. I want you to tell me what the problem looks like. But by the time it gets to an RFP, somebody's already contemplated what the solution looks like. We want to have that opportunity to go back and brainstorm, come up with some great ideas, and then bring them back to the mission and say, what do you think of the following? And in our experience, that is the most efficient and effective way to solve hard problems.
So the Heisberg principle is applied to RFPs.
As it turns out.
Yeah, it's applied to everything, and people don't realize that. Yeah. And that's why it's so important to have. In fact, what I tell my students to do is that maybe you shouldn't do the interviews. Maybe you should hire a third party to come in and ask the questions. And inevitably what happens is the term that comes up is trust.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so what keeps me up at night? I don't know who you are. I'm not going to tell you what keeps me up. I worry about the pitchers and hitters and nationals. And I think about that stuff. But, you know, it's going to take a while before I'm going to open up and say, really, what I'm really concerned about is managing my encrypted data on my network. And I want to be able to sample that and see what's going on. But I'm not going to just open up to anybody. But someone waltzes in with LGS's background. It's like, well, the 750 scientists there, well, they probably have some kind of a solution that can answer my problem. So this is like walking with a bodyguard. It's like, oh, yeah, I got these 750 bodyguards. You can open up to us because we are going to listen and respond.
Yeah, you brought up a key word, trust. We found that when we went through the merger, when Alcatel and Lucent merged, they ended up being a foreign company, a one based in Paris, and that's not – usually highest among the list when you look at sensitive government contracting, and trust gets called into question a lot. So we focused a lot on reestablishing and earning our customers' trust. That comes in both the ability to handle sensitive and classified information, but also trust us with your problems. We are not here to clean out the bank account. We're here to solve hard problems. And at the end of the day, that's what matters to us most. The good guys have to win. Bad guys have to lose. We sleep under one flag. And those things are paramount in our decision making.
So what website should the good guys go to learn more about your company? What's the URL?
LGSinnovations.com. We have a constantly changing group of information there. We talk a lot about our services, about our technology, our capabilities, a little bit on our contracts. And please check it out as often as you can, because we are bringing more innovations to the marketplace. We like to showcase them there as we bring them to market.
We're going to have to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about something called Spark Week. We're going to talk about a group of folks called INSA. And mostly, what I want to ask you after the break is, okay, do you eat your own dog food there, buddy? Really, how do you guys innovate? And this is looking in the mirror. I mean, if I'm going to have someone do innovation for me, I could look at them and say, okay, you're going to fix my car? What kind of car do you drive? You know, it's like if your car's holding up and gets 200,000 miles, I figure you're a good mechanic. But if your car is old, beat up in the garage and not doing anything, it's not going to. So let's take a break, talk about some of the groups you're involved with, and then we'll focus on a four-letter word. The word is STEM, STEM. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have the CEO of LGS, Kevin Kelly. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Kevin Kelly, who's the CEO of a company called LGS. We've been talking about innovation and the Bell Labs, and it seems to me if you Google around and go to Wikipedia, you'll discover that I think the Bell Labs had some kind of like a research summit where they brought in people together, and maybe when the company kind of got split around and everything else, maybe that kind of dissolved. So what's that got to do with you guys?
So, yeah, they used to hold an annual research summit, and they would showcase the ongoing projects and challenge the presenters to keep their presentations to 4 to 6 minutes, real tight, fast, right? Work them through the stage, and you won't put anybody to sleep. And they would sometimes, in some years, brief as many as 200 research projects ongoing in Bell Labs. They filled the Bell Labs auditorium with the other engineers and scientists and people who wanted to learn about what was going on in the labs. We actually took that model and parlayed it into what we call Innovator Showcase, associated with a group that I'm associated with called the Intelligence and National Security Alliance, or INSA. I'm actually the chair of the Technology Council, Innovation and Technology Council. And
been doing it for 10 years?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 10 years. The founder of that council, Bob Farrell, recently stepped down. He's now our chair emeritus, and I am now the chair, and he and I took that Bell Labs Research Summit model and created what we call Innovator Showcase, which will be taking place this May.
My wife tells me that out of every 10 ideas I have, 9 are bad. I said, but Jen, I occasionally get a good one, don't I? Yeah. And I think this is the whole idea.
It is.
You get 50 or 60 ideas. Of course it's going to be. Go to Silicon Valley. There's 20 new ideas a day and 19 are bad. But that one, you have to be open-minded to catch that one good idea, don't you?
You do. And your 20 to 1 is more accurate than your 10 to 1. So it's...
Well, I'm pretty good, huh?
One of the ideas behind Innovator Showcase is for the ODNI. We collaborate with the Director of Science and Technology at ODNI, that's Dr. Honey, and we ask him for a list of technology areas that are challenging the intelligence community. And we came up with cybersecurity and cyber ops, energy, Internet of Things, artificial intelligence and machine learning, new sensing technologies, and then we have this open category, this wild card category called game-changing ideas.
Because we don't know what's coming up next.
We don't know what's coming up next. What aren't we thinking about? And so we put a call for abstracts out. It goes to industry. It goes to academia. And this year we had a record number of responses. They get a very short time period to respond, but I think we're upwards of around 200 responses, maybe 160 responses. And so we divided it up amongst the council members, and we start scoring abstracts, and we do this all in collaboration with the government, and eventually it will all culminate into a one-day, very similar to Bell Labs Summit, presentation-style summit in front of the government as an audience on May 4th.
How can they get information on that?
Best way is to go to insaonline.com, and you can find out more about the Innovator Showcase and about INSA in general and how to get involved.
Because I'm a compulsive radio guy, it's INSA, right?
That's sir.
Good. Yeah, innovation, another way that I guess there's an innovation somewhere in that LGS Innovation Summit. I mean, it's replete with all kinds of innovation. Listen, I like the idea of listening to the federal government. They give you the topics they want. Mm-hmm. They can sit in the back of the room and say, well, loser, whoa, we got someone here. Let's pursue it carefully. And that's really interesting. You know, my wife and I went on for crepes last night, and we had a French guy making crepes. And I always wondered to myself, you know, how does he cook for his family? Does he take his family to McDonald's, or what does he do at home? And so people, when they meet you, and I go, oh, this guy Kevin, yeah, big smart guy, okay, innovation, well, how does his company do innovation? So I'll toss it to you. I say, okay, Kevin, you know, do you eat your own dog food?
Here's
do you
the
just
challenge.
Bring in new people from other companies who are smart with new innovation ideas? How do you apply innovation to your company?
So in two ways. I mentioned before the listen, innovate, deliver. One way is very much externally focused. So once we hear what our government customer challenges are, one of my favorite conversations to have is with a CTO or a mission commander and say, what are your 10 hardest problems? There's a chance we might be able to take one of them off the table. One way is for us to go back and have brainstorming sessions inside the company. And it's really open to anybody who's got some novel ideas about how to solve these hard problems. And when we think we have a winner, we'll go back to the customer and say, here's what we came up with. Another way is just polling the entire employee population. Tell us about your great idea. Could be a new business idea. Could be a way to solve one of our customers' hard problems. It could be completely commercial. And we ask for our employees to submit these ideas. One of our corporate CTOs manages the process. He's got a council of senior engineers and scientists who sort through these ideas. They vet them. They eventually have they pull together what we call Spark Week, a one-week session that we hold commensurate with or coincident with Consumer Electronics Show out in Las Vegas.
I think they changed the name, but it's still CES to me, but they changed that name. So I know someone on the board of directors
yes.
there. It's subtly different. I don't know what, but CES gets 100 billion people, doesn't it?
Well, it's certainly gone beyond the consumer. I mean, they're dealing with, this year there was a lot of automation for the automotive community there was a lot of software for business at CES or whatever it's called now. But we hold this Spark Week, and we like to do it in an innovative, fun environment, and we put people in a room and we have them battle it out. It's our own internal Shark Tank-like process until we have a handful of winners. And those winners eventually get business plans, and we bring them before the senior leadership team and eventually in front of the board of directors to go for funding. And some of these create new businesses. Some of these create new technologies, new licensing, new intellectual property. You never know what's going to come out of Spark Week.
You know, I've studied this so many times. I've, of course, read Innovator's Dilemma.
Yeah.
The Christensen book. And what he said, I'm just repeating what he said. He said, you know, when you get a big organization, you know, the innovation is not going to percolate up. You have to physically get these people away geographically from the headquarters and get them in a separate building and maybe put a pirate flag on top of it and have them come up with ideas that way. Do you think that's true? What do you think about that thought?
Getting them into a separate environment is always helpful. I think CES is there, any kind of industry forum where you've got other engineers and scientists where you can collaborate with and you can share ideas with is always a good, fruitful environment to have these types of discussions. Frankly, it's just too tempting when you're in your office and you're asked to do this virtually to turn your attention to other things. You know, I need to do performance reviews. I need to get monthly reports done. I need to do other things. It's much easier when you get them into a separate, not the cheapest way to do it, but it's more effective for us and more efficient is to put them in a separate environment amongst them peers and make it a competition. There's got to be winners and there's got to be losers. That's just the way our marketplace works.
That's the way it works, and that's really efficient that way. So give me some examples of some ideas that have percolated up from this Spark Week, please.
So I'm not going to tell you about this year's ideas because we haven't announced a single one of them yet, but I encourage you to monitor our website because they will be making their way through the process. And we have some very novel ideas. But one that made it through years past is what a technology we call Code Guardian. It was how do you solve the inherent vulnerabilities that exist in networked equipment? And what we're looking at is the software and the embedded software systems that run switches and routers and voice systems and you name it, anything that's on the enterprise. And we know we were very good at analyzing operational code and source code to find vulnerabilities. We also had an ongoing practice in the area of polymorphic code research. This is typically associated with a virus technology or a virus code that will rewrite itself multiple times to avoid detection and elimination. We combine those two things together in what we call Code Guardian, which is our unique ability to find and identify vulnerabilities in operational code, whether it's on a piece of network equipment or on your phone, it doesn't really matter. We work with the manufacturers to remove those vulnerabilities, and it's an iterative process until we have a nice, clean executable. We then run it through a code shuffler. This is where the polymorphism comes in, and we can create any number of variants, almost a limitless number of variants of that operational code. So think about Microsoft Windows. If you have it on your laptop, I have it on my laptop, and the code is written completely differently but operates exactly the same. If somebody discovers a vulnerability in your system, that's likely not to be successful in my system, and that's an extra layer of protection is that code shuffling technology. And then the third aspect of that is we want to eliminate the man-in-the-middle attack. What if there's a bad actor in the supply chain and somebody who supplants the machine code in the shipping process and puts in a backdoor or something malicious. So what we do is we hold that code in a secure environment and we distribute it directly to the customer. So it's a three-step process.
What I have learned over the years is that malicious code now is on your network.
That's right.
And many times people are very careful about egress and ingress, about stuff coming into the network and don't inspect anything that leaves their network. No, wait a minute. And what about these little things called backdoors that are there that's coming in? And it's a serious problem, and it's a very difficult problem to solve. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about innovation, the federal government, and maybe ways you can help my listeners achieve some of their agency goals. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Kevin Kelly, CEO of a company called LGS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Kevin Kelly. He's the CEO of a company called LGS Innovations. And I guess you put innovations in the job title there. I mean, it's a lot of innovations from your company inside and outside. Many of my listeners I'll be at a trade show or something, or I'll be speaking, and they'll come up to me and they go, "Hey, I heard that Kevin guy, and he seems to know a lot about this innovation stuff. What does he read? What does he listen to? How does he keep up with that?" So I get asked that question. I mean, do you carry on about books, or what do you read? How do you keep up with all this?
You know, my reading habits have changed over the years. There was a time in my life when I fancied myself as an amateur physicist, and I read a lot of physics books. I read Einstein's biography. I read Stephen Hawking's books.
By the way, I have a friend who's got a master's degree in physics, and yeah, he says a lot smarter than any engineer you ever met.
Well, I mean, if you do engineering right, you're using an awful lot of physics. I read Stephen Hawking's Black Hole and Baby Universes. Absolutely fascinating. It was probably one of my worst subjects in college was quantum physics, and the entire book was on quantum. So it was difficult for me, but I still found it enjoyable. As of late, it's less books and it's more trade journals and online literature. I'm reading a lot more of research reports from university, either graduate students or somebody who's got a program in one of the areas that's relevant to us, whether it's a differential absorption LIDAR or spectrum management or to get my news, and this is not a shameless plug, I go to Fed News Radio. That's when I want to find out what's happening in our marketplace. And inevitably, I find there some reference to some hard problem in some agency that means something to us. It could be DISA, it could be one of the intelligence agencies. And that usually steers me down a path of looking for the science behind what the solution might be. And my employees would be quick to tell you, especially my VPs, the next thing I do is I send an email. I said, "Hey, drones are a problem, or spectrum is a problem, or security is a problem. Here's what I read. What do you think?" And turn it over to them to make good things happen.
Let me toss out a hard problem for you, and you can solve it right on the air in front of us right now. Here's a hard problem. You get a 10-year-old girl who's in grade school and really enjoys science and math. By the time she's a junior in high school, you know, culturally, it's not encouraged. Maybe it's cultural, maybe it's not. But I deal with a lot of smart women all the time. And I see this as a problem. I think there's a lot of talent being wasted out there. So have you guys addressed that? I think you're involved with some K-12 program, aren't you?
Yes. So this year we chose to sponsor Washington Exec's K-12 STEM Symposium. It's meant to reach those elementary and middle school age kids. There was several from high school as well, but mostly focusing on the early years and inspire them. We want to show them what careers in STEM look like. And it's not meant to be a career fair. It's more of a science fair. There are, I think, 50 exhibits at this STEM symposium.
And these are like hands-on
lots
things, too.
Lots of hands-on
stuff. This wasn't
stuff.
A poster. Yeah. This is like, come over here, sit down,
yes,
and put your hands in there.
No, yeah, posters are not cool. So what we did was we set up just LGS alone, set up several demonstrations. We showed kids how you can listen to a car radio using a laser vibrometer, a laser system that shot through the glass in the school and out to the car window and picked up the vibrations off of the vehicle
cool.
window. And they could listen to the radio from inside the school that was playing inside the car out in the parking lot. We had a virtual reality demo, which the line was around the block for that. That was I did it myself. It was very unsettling.
I have to realize we had a guy from Microsoft in here. He brought in the HoloLens.
Yeah.
And everyone from Fred Owens Radio came in. They want to try it on.
Yeah.
And this is not 8-year-old girls. This is 58-year-old guys. And it's just intriguing.
So the virtual reality demo was popular with all age groups. We demonstrated some acoustics. These are things that kids read about in books, but they don't really get to see. And our folks up in New Jersey built a resonator box, a box where they had a resonator on one end and they filled it full of little foam balls and they pumped different frequencies through and it moves, the sound waves move the foam balls into peaks and valleys. So So you could demonstrate the wavelength of the sound in visual form to the students, and they could hear as the tone changed in their ear, they could see the different waves forming in the foam balls. And it was lots of hands-on stuff like that that was made it a lot of fun. The theory is someone reached out and touched each of us at some point and inspired us. Somebody lit that fire inside of us for STEM. So we want to be there for that person. If you talk to 100 kids, you might reach one of them, and they might pursue this the same career as we did.
I'm certainly not a nerd, but yesterday I was reviewing 10 equations that have changed the world, and one of them was the Fournier. Is that the Fournier equation?
Fournier,
that's it.
Fournier, yeah.
And I looked at that, and then it dawned on me that, you know, someone in grade school is not going to understand. It'd be a foreign. It might as well be Egyptian hieroglyphics or something. But if you can have a physical model of sound, and then all of a sudden, so that's the problem we're trying to solve. And the tool is an equation you'll learn in 5 years. But the goal is to solve the problem. And if someone sets that as a goal, they're going to go ahead and learn the advanced math, and they're going to go ahead and learn all these important equations, because that's just a way to solve the problem.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. And kids are very visual in the way that they learn. And actually, what you'll find is that most folks who do pursue engineering degrees end up being very, very visual, very mechanically minded. And if you can get them into a hands-on environment and inspire them, I know that when I was in high school, I had two teachers who really inspired me to pursue. One was my high school physics teacher, who used to dress up like Isaac Newton. She put a toilet seat cover on her head to mimic his hat. She got on a skateboard and rode through the hallways of the school juggling apples to demonstrate the conservation of momentum theorem. And then we learned the math. Another one was I had a drafting teacher who made drafting fun, and we did the mousetrap vehicle. So it was the principles of leverage and force, and who could build a vehicle that could drive the furthest down the high school hallway with one spring on a mousetrap. And the kids got really creative. I actually used 33 RPM records as my wheels to have the least amount of friction and the most amount of radius on my tires. But things like that, I think, really reach kids and inspire them.
So maybe it's because of your activities in high school with the records that you were named one of the 25 leaders in government contracting you should know about. Hey, tell me about that high school project. Is that how you got nominated for that?
That's it. That's exactly how I got nominated.
Hey, we heard about that high school project. Show me, is it like, those race car things? Yeah. But you are one of the 25 leaders in government contracting you should know about for maybe some of this innovation and applied innovation to physical problems in the federal government. We used this word earlier. We bounced around, talked about spectrum management, and you think of Isaac Newton and the spectrum and the different colors against the wall. Well, it's a whole lot different than that, but maybe not that much different from spectrum management, is it?
Yeah, spectrum is becoming spectrum management is becoming a huge business area, and it's presented as most businesses are by having to deal with a problem. The problem is, more and more things are wireless. The demand for more wireless communications, more mobility, more bandwidth, more access to information while we're on the move, has created a shortage of bandwidth, a shortage of spectrum. And companies like ours are working on novel ways to both monitor live who's transmitting, where they are, what they're transmitting, what protocols they're using, as well as ways to share spectrum by either doing time slicing or frequency division, and being able to put more than one user into a wireless band is a necessity now. So you'll see satellite providers sharing bandwidth with cellular providers, and likewise with direct broadcast TV providers, all within the same bandwidth, but being able to share the spectrum in a much more efficient way.
40 years ago, the electrical engineers would call that multiplexing. If you remember that term from years ago, it was called multiplexing.
That's exactly right.
And that was physical wires that would multiplex and share different things. And so this is being applied to the wireless environment. So
this
concept that was initially broached with wires and applied to the wireless world of managing that same wire, but this is the same part of the spectrum.
So that same principle continued throughout communications with frequency division multiplexing, dividing up the frequency into different slots, or time division multiplexing. Say you transmit now, then I transmit, then you transmit, then I transmit, and therefore we share the same spectrum. We're looking at spectrum management in the same way you look at managing usage of the highway system. It's about building capacity, and then how do you effectively share that capacity so that you don't create congestion.
And the way to teach that to a grade school child is to say, See that light? When you turn the light on, well, it can be used for managing the light and managing the heat.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Same wire, multiple. So that's what the multiple and multiplex means.
Yeah.
And sometimes a concept are, but now they understand it and then they can apply it further. And that's one of the ways to make and ensure that people are involved in STEM. Let's take a break, come back. We'll talk more about the future of innovation and what innovation means for my federal listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're dealing with an innovator today. We're dealing with Kevin Kelly, who is the CEO of LGS Innovations. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Talking about innovation here for my listeners, federal IT professionals. And Kevin, every one of my listeners is really interested in innovating and changes because I don't think they have much choice. I mean, their budget's getting cut, their people are getting cut, they're asked to do more things. It's really difficult. So we have Kevin Kelly here. He is the CEO from LGS Innovations. And we've asked him every question in the book. We've asked him if he eats his own dog food, and they do, and involved with the community, yes, involved with women in STEM, yes, 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 yes. But what about my little listeners here? So my listeners are, you know, listening to this interview going, well, I've got this peculiar, maybe you're in the intelligence community, and you have this peculiar problem, and you really don't want to advertise it to anyone. I mean, you know, if you're at DOI or if you're over at HHS, you can say, yeah, I got a problem with big data. But in the intelligence community, you may want to be discreet about that.
Yeah.
And so if they're listening to the show and they have a problem maybe with managing spectrum and maybe they have a problem with a malicious code on their network, how can they use the folks at LGS to help them solve that problem?
Great question. I'll go back to our tagline, listen, innovate, deliver. I always advocate before you put pen to paper, before you start working on what you think the design might be, the solution might be, or before you hire your favorite consultant or seat a contract to design a solution for you and start building an RFP, talk to industry. And that's what we always advocate to our mission partners. Tell us long in advance of when you're hitting a milestone where you need to make a buying decision what your problems are. Innovation can cause problems in as many times as it does solve those problems. So it's important to identify the problem clearly, explain why it's a problem, what the solution looks like, and then begin a brainstorming session, an interactive brainstorming session. My advice to the entire government acquisition community when you're dealing with technology and dealing with innovation is to not make it as arm's length, not make it as a buyer and provider defined roles. Get into a conversation and talk about the art of the possible. Don't be afraid to spin up a couple of pilots. There might be three or four viable ideas and you might want to put a little bit of seedling money. We're not talking DARPA work, even just in the IT workplace. Put a little bit of seedling work, do a demonstration and a prototype, and measure the results long before you get into solving a big hairy mess with a singular monolithic program.
No, we've kind of danced around this, the intelligence community, and everyone knows what we're talking about. And they're in a peculiar bind, I think, is because they have unusual problems they have to solve and have to be done very carefully. And I think that's to be very careful about who they share some of this information with. So what's a typical engagement with LGS? I mean, for someone in that area, maybe it's the Air Force worrying about their satellites and managing their spectrum and going back and forth with people in the field. So how does an engagement usually work with you folks?
It's in two forms. We talked earlier about trust. The IC works. Its entire business is based on a foundation of trust. Once they find providers that they trust, both that can handle the sensitive information as well as deliver meaningful, impactful solutions, they will seek you out. And oftentimes they seek us out for areas where we have specific expertise. We're not all things to all people, but they know if it deals with secure, high data rate communications, private communications, the ability to determine vulnerabilities in systems, the areas where we have practice, they will come to us directly and seek us out. Another way in a more open market forum is, and they, just like the civilian part of the government, they have industry days and they showcase some of their challenges and some of the upcoming programs. And it's obviously for cleared personnel only. But our advocacy is to get into us the smallest group you can, as quick as you can, get with the mission directors, get the innovators with the mission directors, and let's talk about hard problems and what the art of the possible might look like.
You know, many times defining the problem is difficult, and there are things that people don't know. So would you bring in a subject matter expert who's familiar with different types of signals in the spectrum to bring it in, or is that the next step? Is the first one listen and try to scope it out, or do you bring in the smart folks then, or where do you bring in the smart folks, the brainiacs with the PhDs from Stanford?
So first of all, selfless plug. I mentioned it was hard to get a job at LGS. We only have the smart folks.
So. That should be in a business card. Hey, we only have the smart folks.
We only have the smart folks.
Give us a call.
No, we like to bring, in terms of your question, we like to bring the SME or the subject matter expert in on the first conversation and resist the urge to engineer the solution on the fly. Let's bring the SME in and let's talk about the problem. We should have a very well-defined problem statement before we start to bend metal, as they say. We will work on the solution later, but the SME knows how to ask those difficult questions and have you thought of this and what happened when you tried the following, and that's really what you need to flesh out as part of the problem statement.
I'll give you a problem from a Satellite 2017 conference. There are people who are putting up constellations of satellites.
Yes.
And so here it is, 2017, I'm happy, you're happy, we're sitting here eating hamburgers and watching baseball, and all of a sudden, October, maybe some guy named Musk puts up 3,000 satellites, a constellation, and your signal's bad. And so just because you're fat and happy now doesn't mean 6 months from now, things aren't going to go upside down. And then you go to the extra spectrum and go, oh, well, this used to always work, Kevin. What's going on? You know, what do we do now?
Yeah, you're bringing up two trends in our industry. One of them is the large constellation satellite formation, where we're using smaller and smaller satellites, some of these 50 to 100 pounds. And these rockets can launch thousands of pounds. So what do? They launch 20 of them at a time. And so they're very effectual. They don't have as long a lifespan, but they didn't cost as much to build. So eventually when they run out of fuel, we'll just fly them into the Earth's atmosphere and burn them up. But while they're operating, they're producing a lot of RF energy. And this is an area that we began addressing with the Air Force many years ago when they used to have the TSAT program before that was canceled. The purpose of the TSAT program was to provide a global information grid for the warfighter using satellites, and they determined early on that they needed to move to the optical domain and out of the RF domain, that the contention for spectrum was going to become a major...
They foresaw that.
Yes, they did, and it was going to be a major issue that the warfighter had to deal with. So we began building space-based lasers back in the, late 90s, early 2000s, and we got to a prototype phase a few years later. We are now at the point where we have commercial versions of these lasers that don't require any RF spectrum, and like a laser does, it's a point-to-point, so you don't have the wave propagation that you have in RF energy that scatters along the ground as it hits the Earth.
In that world, it's RF to IP challenges, and so you're just stepping around that. You go, hey, we don't need no stinking RF. Yep. We'll get a big flashlight up there.
That's exactly right. We'll go right to the optical domain, and it's easier said than done, but it's a technology that works, and I think, as you mentioned, the problem of more and more satellites, this is going to become the core technology for satellite communications.
So is that where the phrase RF photonics fit in? Is that the area we're talking about?
It is. And so we've got a lot of research in photonics and moving RF energy into the photonic domain, both for communications as well as processing. I mean, one of the things that RF photonics opens up is the ability to do very wideband, ultra-wideband RF analysis. Normally you have a radio that has to change frequency very quickly, and you have a bank of synthesizers that have to synthesize a signal and do processing. Well, if you can convert all of that RF energy into optical energy and use an optical processor to do analysis, you've greatly simplified the analysis phase of analyzing RF energy. So these are two of several areas that we have in research in photonics.
Okay, crystal ball time. We're going to get a piece of granite here. We're going to chisel in your predictions for the next the next 5 years for your world. I mean, do you think... innovation is going to stick? You think it's going to get, halt? Or what's going to happen what's going to happen with innovation in the next 5 years?
So the trends we see is innovation is happening at a faster pace. That's one thing to make sure that you understand, is that the luxury that we had to analyze a problem and develop a solution over a multi-year period has evaporated, and most of the apps that we use today didn't exist 2 years ago. Many of the IoT devices, Internet of Things, which is a second area that's going to be a huge area of change, these IoT devices didn't exist just a few years ago. And if you're looking at, crystal ball, if you're looking at what are some of the technologies that are going to have the biggest impact on our society, IoT clearly has to be one of them. We've been talking about cyber and the move to the cloud for many years. Well, IoT is cloud-based. It introduces a whole new challenge for cyber, and that is I can't go buy any electrical appliance at an appliance store and plug it into my outlet at home without it going through Underwriters Laboratory certification. But who certified my wireless thermostat? Nobody. Who certified my wireless camera that's out in my front yard? Nobody did. So is there anybody looking at the holes, anybody looking at the problems? What are the cyber vulnerabilities that I've just introduced to my secure environment by adding this IoT device? That being said, I love them. They're just incredibly convenient. So that's just a piece of technology we're going to have to deal with.
Bounces back to gap analysis with this issue of spectrum again. Well, we're running out of time here, Kevin. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, CEO of LGS Solutions, Kevin Kelly. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.